Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, have you ever been involved in trying to round up volunteers for a good cause? Maybe you need tens of people, or it could have been hundreds. A daunting prospect, even for the most awesome and enthusiastic organiser. Well, what about the prospect of getting tens of thousands of people out on the ground for a mammoth task, a task that has defied even the US federal government? A fix-up job for the heart of what they call in the States the Rust Belt. Used to be the manufacturing heart of a prosperous America. Detroit is the city. Gave us Motown music, it gave us the automobile industry, and of course with the collapse of manufacturing in the United States, with the global financial crisis and so many other things, Detroit has become a symbol for that collapse. Almost impossible, you would think, to restore hope to that city. And yet, that's just what our next guest is doing. He's a pastor who originally went to Detroit because he wanted to serve the poor in that city, and he found that planting a church wasn't the only thing that he needed to do. He actually needed to be active in the community. His name is Chris Lambert. Chris Lambert took on the challenge of restoring one of the most difficult cities in the U.S.
So Detroit has often been ranked as the most violent city in the United States. Detroit's a city that had about 1.8 million people at one point. Now we have about 650,000. Detroit is the city that put the world on wheels, literally. The first stoplight in the world was in Detroit in the 1920s. In 1960, we had the highest per capita income in the country. But things obviously have taken a serious turn for the worse, but now we're actually known as the comeback city in America, so it's been quite a whirlwind.
That is a turnaround, and in the middle of all of that, the poverty that comes from industrial change, the loneliness, the lack of sense of purpose that comes from people being trained as an automotive worker and then losing that position, one thing leads to another into a cycle that ended up a few years ago in a pretty bad situation.
Yes. So many would trace the city's ails to something that happened in 1967, which would be called either a riot or an uprising or a rebellion. But really, the conflict was much deeper than one event. Many things happened to precede and create that event, whether it was redlining, where African Americans were forced to live in specific places in the city, and they weren't able to climb up the ladder economically, because if you wanted to move into a better part of the city where your kids wouldn't be around certain influences, you weren't allowed to do that, or police brutality or a number of factors. But eventually, the population declined dramatically as that violence increased. And what was created would be a society that was severely lacking economic opportunity and economic activity. Or if you look at a lot of the work that we've done renovating schools, you will see schools in Detroit where the roof was so bad it would literally rain on the children, because basically Detroit had just been cut off from so many of the resources that the rest of the state were getting.
Chris Lambert is our guest on Open House. He's the founder of Life Remodeled. So your story in Detroit begins when you felt called to that city. How did that happen?
So we were living, my wife and I, in California at the time. And even though I grew up in the Midwest in the United States, I never wanted to move back there again. I wanted to live in L.A. for the rest of my life. But there were two things that my wife and I had very much in common when it came to where we wanted to live. Number one, we wanted to be in a place with a lot of diversity racially. And number two, we wanted to always be somewhere where there was a lot of social need. And so Los Angeles had both of those things, and we were content. But then when we looked at the difference between Los Angeles and Detroit. By the way, my wife grew up in Detroit. Even though she was born in Romania, she grew up in the city of Detroit. We realized that the amount of work being done in Detroit was far outshadowed by the amount of work being done in Los Angeles, and the need was much greater in the city. And so we felt a sense of calling that that was where God was calling us to spend our lives.
And so the decision was to plant a church, but that wasn't at all by any means the end of the of the story. It's just the beginning. And in fact, is it fair to say a bit of a false beginning?
No, I wouldn't call it a false beginning, because I think God uses our journeys to really take us where he wants us to go, but it's not an end destination, so life is a marathon. Life is an endless journey in many senses. But God originally put on my heart to become a pastor and plant a church, and then as we moved to Detroit and started this church, one of the things I said to this small group of people is, the three marks of an evangelical church, or how I would have understood it at the time, are preaching, worship, music, and kids ministry. But I said the bottom line is, no matter how well any church does those three things, the majority of the world around them will never step foot in their church service unless they have an encounter with God where they're at. So we've got to figure out, how do we reach people where they are, love them just the way they are with no strings attached. That was in 2007 when we launched that non-denominational church, and eventually that turned into what now we've created called Life Remodeled.
So Life Remodeled grows out of a church. It's much more than a church. It's a church in action. It's almost a James, Book of James type church, isn't it?
So it is an organization that was started by a church, but we've been very intentional to actually be a non-religious organization. And the reason we do that is because we don't want there to be any barriers for anyone, whatever their beliefs are in religion, politics, moral values, you name it. What we really believe is that we want to bridge people across divides in order to help transform each other's lives, and we're all better together. We all have something to give, and we all have something to learn from one another. And what that also does is it creates an opportunity for the church to be the church. So every year we mobilize at least 10,000 volunteers to clean up 300 city blocks in the city of Detroit, among other things that we do. And representative among those 10,000 people, you will find over 60 churches, evangelical churches. You'll find the whole Catholic Archdiocese, and you'll find a large number of other denominations as well. And you'll find them working together, and many times people will even share their faith verbally as they advance the gospel through demonstrating it physically.
So let's just dwell on that. That's 10,000 volunteers that you mobilize each year. The number of city blocks, I think, did you say 300 city blocks?
300, which equates to about 4 to 4.5 square miles.
And the idea is to clean it up?
Yes. So in Detroit, because we lost so many people population-wise, we had a city of 1.8 million. Now we have 650,000. You have a lot of vacant land. Yeah. And then many of those who are residents in these neighborhoods are not homeowners. Over 50% are not homeowners. And of those who are homeowners, over 50% of them are senior citizens. And so what that creates is a lot of vacant land, a lot of overgrown brush and weeds. And then there's also a tremendous amount of illegal dumping in Detroit, which I've been fascinated to learn that the majority of that illegal dumping actually doesn't come from Detroit residents, but from those who live outside the city, and they think they can get away with dumping on our beautiful city. So we work together to clean that up.
Now, there's a very important principle from the Bible that we're called to be a blessing to the city in which we live. This is a command that was given to the Israelites when they're in exile, for goodness sake.
Yes, so I think that we're called to make an impact wherever we are, yeah, right? Whether that's the city, the suburbs, whether that's a rural area. But Detroit is certainly an area that's near and dear to almost everyone's heart that even lives in the metropolitan Detroit region. Most people have been impacted by the city of Detroit, whether it was through the auto industry or music or athletics or a number of things. But it's a city that has tremendous historical value and significance, and I believe can have even more significance in the future than it's had today. And I'm so proud of the way the church has begun to realize that and has begun to realize what's necessary in order to help transform Detroit is really to take the time to build strong relationships with people and overcome the differences that exist through love and through faith and hope.
So you have 10,000 people at least once a year sowing into their community by cleaning it up. They're sowing into the lives of those around them as well. But then you're doing some other very very generous and very active acts of service towards the disadvantaged in your city.
So we do two other things. We also renovate a community asset every year. Usually we've renovated schools. This year we've acquired a former school building that was vacant, and we're turning it into what we're calling a community innovation center. And the other thing we do is we repair owner-occupied homes of owner-occupants that live in the community where we serve.
With the idea that they can't do that for themselves, and this was one of the places, amongst others, that was hit by the global financial crisis with devalued houses, creating additional poverty for the people living in them, yes?
Right. So what we're in the business of doing is creating opportunity. Our mayor likes to say a lot that talent is evenly distributed around the world, but opportunity is not. And so one of the things we believe is a child's zip code should not determine their destiny. And if you look at the amount of opportunity that's prevalent for children just outside the city of Detroit, it far outweighs the amount of opportunity for Detroit children and Detroit residents. So the work that we do is really about creating that opportunity to where those who have been starved of opportunity can really make something great out of their own lives, whether that's spiritually or financially or emotionally or physically. It's really an unlimited number of things that can happen when opportunity is presented.
Now, there's no doubt that despite the fact that you're not a religious organization, you are an organization of Christians, church members, working together for the benefit of the city. So what's the spin-off of that been? Has it been received?
So what I've found is that I'm actually able to share my faith now more publicly, more effectively than I ever was as a pastor, and that when I would pastor, which is a great calling and a great profession, but when I would do that and I would meet an interesting businessman or a businesswoman, we'd have this wonderful conversation. Then I would ask them, what do you do for a living? And they would tell me, then they would ask me. And 9 times out of 10, if I was talking to someone who was not a Christian, this wall would go up, whether someone would apologize for cussing or they would say, I'm not really into that religious stuff. Or sometimes people would just literally walk away. Now, with the work that I do, I get asked all the time, why do you do it? And my answer is, well, I want to be like this Jewish construction worker who lived about 2,000 years ago. He was brutally murdered and he came back to life. And people almost always ask me for more information on that. They're like, really? That is interesting. And so I'm able to genuinely share my story and people want to hear it. And there's a night and day difference from trying to tell someone about Jesus that is interested from someone who is not interested. And so I conclude that the reason people are interested is because in the United States, the church has earned this brand name of just being all about talk and not about action, and all about trying to get you into their building and ask you for money and then not living anything out according to what they've been preaching. That's the brand name that we have. Well, when Christ followers show people that that's not who we really are and that's not who Jesus is, and we act like Jesus, we lead with actions and then follow with words, that's a powerful combination. And that's what I believe Jesus did when he would go into villages. He would heal the sick, raise the dead, cast out demons. He got your attention, right? Met your real needs, your physical needs, your felt needs. And then he communicated what that was really all about and who he is.
Chris, in our country and in yours, there is a disconnect by members of the general community with the church because of some of the things they've seen that church leaders have been involved with, and also because they hear Christians involving themselves in politics for perhaps political reasons or moral reasons, but they don't very often see people doing the sorts of things that you're doing in Detroit. Is this sort of radical action that you're taking, is that the antidote to the cynicism of the modern world about the church itself?
I think it's just part of the antidote of the cynicism that we have about ourselves as well, and that we have about culture in general. I mean, many people are living very mundane and frustrated lives, and very few people do you find that really live a life where they feel like they're living on purpose and they're living with value and meaning. People are caught up in the rat race, as you might call it, or they're caught up in trying to find a solution to fill that void, whether it's politics or whether it's an addiction, you name it. But just living like Jesus obviously is a game changer for a person as an individual. And then that spills out into the greater culture. And so one of the things that we find often is many people will come to Life Remodeled to come and serve the what they would call the less fortunate, but they find that they themselves are dramatically changed in the process. And I think it's because when we begin to live in rhythm with the lifestyle of Jesus, who you and I both know was fully committed to serve and not to be served. And he was obviously full of boldness, but he was also extremely humble. And that posture we call bold humility, of where we're not a doormat, but we're not a bull either, right? And so we come to learn, we come to love, we come to serve, and we do so with tremendous intentionality. And I do think that breaks down a lot of walls and a lot of barriers that have been built in our culture.
Well, it's been wonderful meeting with you. Thank you for what you do. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Stephen, and blessings upon you and all your listeners.
That's Chris Lambert. Part of his story, by the way, involves Wollongong University and an Anglican church down Wollongong Way, where apparently a sermon had a really particularly big impact on him. But now he's in Detroit, serving with the organization Life Remodeled that he began with his church, and mobilizing people in Detroit around what is, without question, a Christ-centered, a Christ-modeled ministry in that city. But it involves using their hands and feet to rebuild stuff, to bring hope into that city. It's a great model for how the church can be. And as Chris said, at a time when brand church is sometimes known for all other kinds of things, for brand church to be known as the hands and feet of Jesus is a really, really great witness. And I met up with Chris Lambert recently at the Q Ideas Conference.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.